Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. We've got a full house.
We most certainly do. And this is my last broadcast before the first of the year? We're getting
it
close.
It is yours. Some of us are continuing on.
I'm headed to the beach tomorrow, to Navarre, not far from my hometown of Pensacola, but got to clock in for a little while here today. But it's a delight to do it. We've got a studio full. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the guys from Lawn Tap. We have a chef with us today. We're going to catch up with Sky and talk about Taste of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So, but first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to bring back to the Business Radio X microphone from the Atlanta Beltline Partnership, Executive Director, Chief Mohawk, King Mahu, Mr. Rob Brawner. How you been, man?
Been doing all right, Stone. Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
So before we get into what you got going on, can you share a little bit about the Beltline and what it is for the people who aren't familiar?
Sure. The Atlanta Beltline is connecting the city in unprecedented ways. It's knitting together 45 neighborhoods in town along 22 miles of historic railroad corridor, and we're connecting all those neighborhoods with trails, with transit, parks, public art, affordable housing, and really creating the framework for Atlanta to be a much more sustainable, walkable, connected city.
But can you talk about the history? Like, how did this come about?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the great stories about the Beltline is how it started. It came out of a master's thesis from Georgia Tech. And that was in the late 90s. And then in the early 2000s, a lot of grassroots and community support for it elevated it up to Mayor Franklin at the time. And then she turned to Atlanta's corporate and philanthropic communities to figure out how to get this thing done. And so in 2005, the city council and public schools in Fulton County approved a redevelopment plan, which put in place the 25-year, $4.8 billion vision for this project. But it's you know, really fantastic. You've got, again, kind of thesis, community, philanthropy, business, everybody really rallying around this idea to get it off the ground. And we're going to get it done by 2030.
And then where is it located?
So it's located in the core of the city. So it's a 22-mile ring that goes on the northern end from about Lindbergh MARTA station down to University Avenue on the south. And along the way, it connects the zoo, the Carter Center. On the west side, you've got the Bellwood Quarry, which is being made into a reservoir that's going to provide 30 days of drinking water for the city. We got Driller Mike out there right now digging that big tunnel between the quarry and the waterworks and then out to the Chattahoochee.
And then right now, what's the most kind of most activity? Where have you, what has been built so far?
Right. Well, we got about 8 miles of trail that have been built. And another four and a half that are under construction right now and will be open next fall. So there's 3 miles on the west side, a tremendous investment in Southwest Atlanta, connecting Washington Park down to University Avenue. Mm-hmm. And that was made possible under Mayor Reed's leadership. We secured a Tiger V grant from the federal government and then $10 million of philanthropic funding made possible in part by a lead gift from the James M. Cox Foundation. So that's going to be open next fall. And then also many of your listeners might be familiar with the East Side Trail. So that goes from Piedmont Park down past Pont City Market and into Inman Park. That's about 2.25 miles now, but the mile and a half extension is under construction and that will open up next year as well.
So that's ending right now around the Croc Street area?
Exactly.
And then it's going to go a little farther?
Yeah, I'll go down through the Croc Street Tunnel and down into Reynoldstown. And we're particularly excited at the Atlanta Beltline Partnership. We just recently moved our offices onto that new piece that's under construction. And next year, we're looking forward to opening the first Atlanta Beltline Visitor Center when that trail opens up.
Now, how has it transformed the community in the areas that it's up and running?
You're seeing an amazing, amazing amount of activity around the Atlanta Beltline. Just along the East Side Trail, we get almost 2 million users this year. So you get a lot of people.
Can you even imagine that?
I could not have imagined it, right? I think it's fair to say that it's far exceeded a lot of our expectations. And
it 2 million people walking in that trail where...
Well, not just walking. I mean, walking,
right, biking, right, everything,
skateboarding, you know, right. All that, and it's really helping to promote a palpable shift in the way people get around the city, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so you really do see people walk into the store, they're riding their bike to work, they're getting out and exercising in parks, and it's a new way of life. And I think that you're in part seen by the sales tax approval that happened in November. So the city of Atlanta residents voted to support both a half-cent T-SPLOST, mm-hmm. Or sorry, half-cent MARTA tax and a four-tenths of a penny T-SPLOST in November. And both of those sales taxes are going to really accelerate the build-out of both our transit systems and our trail and connection networks and streetlights and all that. So it's, you know, people want to get around the city in a different way. I think the Beltline's really tapped into that. And it's also spurred a tremendous amount of economic development. There's been over $3 billion of new private economic development that's happened around the Beltline.
Now, what about the Atlanta Beltline Partnership membership campaign? What is that about?
Yeah, so the Atlanta Beltline Partnership is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We work very closely with our partners at Atlanta Beltline, Inc., who are the ones who actually build the Beltline. But the Atlanta Beltline Partnership is the way that for residents who want to support this vision and want to continue to help move it forward through their private contributions and becoming members, they help us do that, right? We're seeing that residents want to live this Atlanta Beltline lifestyle. They want to connect mm-hmm. with the project, and they want to see more of it developed. And through the contributions to the Beltline Partnership, that does three things. It helps us to raise philanthropic dollars. So we've raised over $50 million so far to help build parks and trails. And these contributions from individuals help give us the resources we need to go raise those larger gifts from philanthropy. But the individual contributions also support our programming. So a lot of people are maybe have toured the Beltline through one of our bus tours or participated in one of our free fitness classes or been a volunteer with the Beltline. You know, all those programs are made possible through individual contributions to the Atlanta Beltline Partnership. And thirdly, we really help to connect a lot of partner organizations into the communities around the Beltline and bring more of a focus to issues like health and housing and economic opportunity, job creation, and bringing in those partners so that they can help strengthen those neighborhoods around the Beltline as part of what the partnership does as well.
Now, are you seeing the neighborhoods being strengthened?
Absolutely. I mean, you see the jobs that have been created. You see the people, again, changing their life and becoming healthier just mm-hmm. in the way they get around the city on a daily basis. Absolutely. The Beltline's anticipated to create about 30,000 new full-time jobs. As well as a significant amount of affordable housing. So we still got work to do on those fronts, but you can see kind of the positive vitality and transformation that's happening. So we appreciate people's contributions. Buildthebeltline.org is where people can go to become a member between now and the end of the year. And we've kind of made it a little fun, right? We've got three great prizes that folks could win. One is a tiny door. So some people might be familiar you're seeing these around town.
Yeah.
So the literally little tiny doors, but we've got a custom designed one by Karen Anderson, who is contributing that to one of the winners. And then the second thing we have is a bike that you can use from Mountain High Outfitters. And the third is a really cool opportunity to lead the lantern parade. So some of your,
cool.
Have you been to the Lantern Parade, Stone?
No, but I've heard about it.
Yeah, we had over 70,000 people came out this year. So just a magical night of lights, homemade lanterns, just up and down the East Side Trail. It's really become a significant event for the city. And Chantel Ritter, who's the person who leads that with the crew of Grateful Gluttons, she's offering somebody the opportunity to not only help plan that, but to be out in front of the parade and to help lead it. So,
and then where the parade goes, it ends at Ponce City Market? Or
the parade actually runs the full length of the East Side Trail. So down from Irwin Street in Inman Park up to Piedmont Park.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, the last time that you actually picked up a tab, didn't you buy me lunch at something right along that East deal there?
Yes, at Croc Street Market.
At Croc Street Market. I love that area.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have Lee Cantor pockets to support this effort, right? You don't have to have that kind of money. Just us regular folks can make a contribution and feel good about it.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll accept any amount. Membership started at $45. And when you become a member, Stone, next time you and Lee go to Croc Street Market, you might find a restaurant that's providing a discount So you'll get a member card. So, yeah, you know, it won't be quite as be quite as much.
So membership has its privileges.
It sure does. And we also at different levels have some Beltline merchandise and things that come with your membership.
Now, have you done a membership drive before?
We've always had the ability for individuals to contribute. The membership has been a little bit more recent in the past 3-4 years. And having, you know, something like with the prizes and making it a little bit more fun, is that's a new thing this year.
Do you have a goal you're shooting for?
Yeah, we're shooting for 500 new members. So again, we're incredibly grateful to those who have supported us in the past. We're trying to expand that reach and bring up to 500.
And then, so when you join, you get these 500 new members. How are you going to communicate with them throughout the year to let them know what's going on?
Yeah, so when you become a member, we'll add you onto our email list. We have regular communications that go out, and then we obviously encourage people to follow us on social media at the Beltline Facebook page or Twitter and Instagram. So that's another way that folks can follow us. And then we do try to keep things in the news. And
and that's a place to go to find out what activities going on the Beltline.
Absolutely, because there are a lot of things going on really on a daily basis throughout the Beltline. Obviously, some big events throughout the year, like Art on the Atlanta Beltline and the Lantern Parade and the Fourth Ward Fall Fest. We also have the Washington Park Jamboree that we'll be doing in the spring, which is out on the west side. It's a really great community festival that has more of kind of health-minded focus, but get families and kids out there playing, having a good time. And then there are lots of other events like our race series. We had the Run, Walk, Go, which was presented by Delta this year. We just had our largest ever East Side 10K, but we'll also do a race on the west side. And then we have, again, our free fitness classes that go throughout the year, tours, walking, biking, bus tours, just a lot of good events throughout the year.
You must have a blast doing that. What do you do day to day? Are you talking to folks about new ideas for events, or how do you spend your day typically?
Well, as you might expect, there's no typical
right,
day.
Right.
But you know, I do. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I've been working on this with the Beltline Partnership now for about 10 years. And to have the opportunity to play a small role in something that is as transformative as the Atlanta Beltline is certainly very exciting. On a daily basis, it's ranging from going to, you know, see donors and trying to raise money to being out in communities and helping to spread the word and helping to guide the wonderful team we have at the Beltline Partnership as they put together all this wonderful programming.
I just think I would sleep really well at night if this is what I did for a living. It just sounds like so much fun, and you're doing really good work. Two words for you: wine tasting. Any place we might do that along the Beltline sometime?
Absolutely. There are a number of
restaurants.
There are a number of restaurants. I think you have a food person on the show
later, right?
So maybe they can speak to some of the great establishments.
Now, are other communities reaching out to you to kind of borrow some of these ideas to make this happen in other places of the country?
Yeah, you know, the Atlanta Beltline is definitely the most comprehensive project that's been done in Atlanta's history. And it's really one of the most comprehensive being done in the country and in the world. So we do have a lot of cities around the country, around the world, trying to understand how we're doing this and learning from the work that we're doing. While there are, you know, certainly great projects like the High Line in New York that many are familiar with, none of them are putting together the trail, the transit, the parks, the housing, all of it.
I mean, the High Line is a nice thing, but the amount of distance you guys are covering.
Yeah, the High Line's about a mile and a half, and we're about 22, right? Yeah, so it's a different type. I mean, we're a transportation project, right? We're the High Line's, you know, more of a park,
right?
Frankly, so it's bold. It's bold, and it has attracted a lot of attention. There was an article in the New York Times earlier this year that called the Beltline potentially the most important rail transit project in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, good stuff. If somebody wanted to become a member again, website?
Yeah, buildthebeltline.org is where they can go to become a member. And if they just want to learn about the Beltline, beltline.org.
Great.
Well, keep up the good work, man, and keep us informed. Let's make sure that from time to time you come in and get everybody updated, okay?
Absolutely. I always love coming here.
All right. Can you hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Sure.
Is there any grass along the Beltline? Probably is a little bit, huh?
There is grass along the Beltline. There's native grasses. And
all right. That's my segue.
Good segue.
Now we're going to visit from Lawn Tap, Will and Jeremy. I wasn't going to try to pronounce your last name, Will, so I just went with Will and Jeremy. I figured, look, we've known each other for a good 15 minutes, which should be on a first-name basis. Tell us a little bit about Lawn Tap. What are you out there doing for folks?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, LawnTap is basically an on-demand lawn care service. And what we do is primarily provide a way for homeowners and business owners to actually get their lawn mowed instantly. So if you have an iPhone or an Android phone, basically what you do is you download the app and you put in a request, and that request is sent to hundreds of lawn care providers within your area that get to bid on that project. And once they get it, they perform the service and payment is done on phone.
So it's Uber for landscapers?
Uber for landscape. My CTO, he hates to compare it to Uber, but you know what? It sort of has the same business model as Uber. That's right.
So now, how'd you guys get into this?
Yeah, actually, I was driving down I-75 last year, and I'm noticing all these trucks pulling these F-150 trucks pulling lawnmowers and things like that, and I'm thinking to myself, is there a way for these guys to actually market their business? And I thought about it, and I said, well, is there a way for homeowners to actually, get lawn care service without, having to ask their next door neighbor or having to go to Facebook or Google or something like that? And there had to be an easier way for you to get lawn care service instantly. So the idea just clicked in my head. I called Jeremy up, and I said, hey, listen, I think we might be onto something here. And I told him the idea, and as soon as he heard it, literally fell over in his chair and said, let's try to put something together.
Now, what's it like, though, trying to wrangle all the people who are doing the actual work of the mowing of the lawns?
Yeah, basically, what we do is we actually make the system easier for them. So in order for the lawn care providers to actually get the business, they have to register on LawnTap. Now, usually your traditional way, if you're a lawn care provider, is usually you go, you build your business by word of mouth.
Right.
And what we're doing is we're providing them a way for them to not only build their business through mobile, but more importantly, actually expand the business through, services that they perform. So if they perform a great service, then they get rated on our system and they increase in rankings and so forth.
Now, how do they determine the price?
Yeah, so basically the price is determined by an algorithm that we have. So I'm sort of the business side of things. So I'll pass it over to Jeremy, our technical guy, to answer that.
Sure. So currently what happens is when, say, I'm a user and I download the app, I register, and one of the first things I have to do is input my property and my lawn. We call it My Lawns in the app. As part of that process is you actually get a map on the screen, and you just trace, it's a satellite image of your property looking mm-hmm. down above, and you just trace the area of your lawn. And then that goes into our backend, runs through an algorithm, and just basically, dependent on the size of the property, you'll get your price right there. It's something we're still trying to evolve. It's not completely perfect right now. We've seen instances where, let's say my lawn is actually broken up into different polygons, right?
Right.
It can be difficult. But we try our best to kind of, listen to the users and also the partners as well, because they also typically have, their own way of pricing things as well. So we're trying to find a good way to collaborate all that together.
Now, is this something that, what if I want kind of weird services? Oh, can you do the bushes, or can you edge, or can you, how does that come into play?
Yeah. So right now it's basically just everything in the app is like a standard cut, edge, that sidewalks and patios and things, and then blow off the surfaces. It's just basic services. We do have plans coming up, first quarter to add in leaf removal, hedge trimming. There's also some things we're looking at doing, like cleaning gutters, additional things just outside of like lawn care services as well.
But it's services that they could offer.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but this is pretty real time. So describe it to me from the service provider's perspective, the landscaper's perspective. I'm out tooling around. I just did my 10 o'clock property. I don't have one until 1, but I'm not going to go home because I live, an hour away or what have you. Am I going to get like beeped or something, and then I can respond or not respond? Walk me through that aspect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, you as a lawn care provider, you have the opportunity to actually stay where you are. So if you complete a service, you can actually stay there and see the requests as they come through based on your location.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you want to go grab a bite to eat for about half an hour and then come back, you can do that. But all the requests will come through, and you have the ability to actually accept those requests as they come within that same area.
Right. Some of the car sharing services have similar, where they have hot zones, right? That mm-hmm. So you're using similar concept here. So, there'll be some neighborhoods that you guys lock down the whole neighborhood, right? And so there could be like 10 yards, and then they can just sit there all day.
Yep. So yeah, it's all based on location.
And you're kind of their business development for these services and giving them an opportunity to make more revenue without really doing anything differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, and again, the lawn care providers, the traditional route that they have right now to actually make money is, you know, either advertising on Google or Facebook. Well, with this, they have the opportunity to actually market themselves to hundreds of homeowners and businesses that are looking for lawn care services.
Right.
You know, and it's actually free marketing, free advertising for them.
Right.
So yeah.
So do you guys need money? Because this, you're kind of in startup mode, right? Do you need or want money, or are you totally customer funded? Because,
well,
like
you know,
said, Lee's got a pretty deep
I know.
Pocket.
Yeah, I mean, Lee, we'd love to have your cash. That's a great question. We are actually in the seed funding stage right now. We are talking to a potential VC firms that are interested, mm-hmm. and angel investors that are interested as well. And they actually see that the business of lawn care, it's a $76 billion industry. So, I mean, you know, just a fraction of that.
Just $1 billion of that, and you guys would be happy, right?
Yeah. Pretty much. There you go. You know, and it's like, you know, smart money knows where to invest. So these guys see
and
that.
And this is fragmented. This probably checks all the boxes that VCs are looking for.
And all the VCs you're talking to, so many of them are like, oh my God, I got to get to the lawn mode.
Right.
Dude, relatives are going to be here in like 2 days.
That's right.
Now, who's the one that's kind of guaranteeing service to make sure the person is reliable and is doing the
good job?
That's
Jeremy. That comes out of his pocket. Yeah. Right?
No, because from a customer standpoint, that's the thing that I care about. I'm going to have, because literally it could be a different person every time that I use the service, right? That's kind of my lawn.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of part of it as well, is talking to homeowners about this thing, and even just family members when we very early on is, you know, running through this concept, right? It could be a different person each time, but the point is, and this is something we truly like to try and hammer home, is everyone who comes out to perform a service is going to go through a vetting process. It's not just going to be someone who goes to our website and signs up. I have a lawnmower, I can perform service.
Right.
There's a vetting process.
Right. Just like the car sharing companies do a vetting as well. So you're going to put somebody through kind of the ringer a little bit to make sure they are reliable and they do a good job. But still, it's a person over time knows my lawn, knows all the idiosyncrasies of what I like and how it should be, and then how are you going to deal with that?
So with that, the idea is we're going to allow partners to have customers. And this is a feature coming early next year. Mm-hmm. So that if a partner goes to a property and they say, this would be perfect for me, it's kind of already in my normal route.
Right.
Can I have this as a permanent customer? We're going to allow them to do that.
Okay. So that is a departure from the car sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So is there an application here for B2B for commercial properties to do that work, or is this primarily aimed at the consumer?
Yeah, there is actually. we are also trying to target real estate agents. We've noticed that. We've noticed that a lot of them, you know, either own multiple properties that, for instance, if they're showing one property, they need the lawn mowed immediately.
Right.
Instead of them having to, pick up the phone and call someone or figure out exactly who's going to take care of that service. All they have to do is download the app and pretty much just put in a request, and literally in minutes, you have someone.
Right, all the rental properties.
Yeah,
that's right.
I love that.
Yeah. So you're looking for investors, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, we are definitely looking for investors at the moment. What we're doing is we're looking for a seed investment of $1 million. And basically, that's going to take us into the next year, hopefully, to next December. We're looking to ramp up operations really, really fast. Like I said, we're talking to a lot of smart money guys that know where the industry is heading. Quite frankly, the lawn care industry is the only industry that hasn't, caught on to the mobile and digital age. So that's probably what's most interesting, and investors see that. So that's what we're trying to do by pioneering this industry.
Now, are you out there in the wild right now, or is this still a concept? Do you have your mowing lawns? No, you got it's
operational? Yeah, we do have both apps. There's a partner app and a homeowner app. They're in the app store right now. Yep.
All right. So let's get a little real-time coaching from the entrepreneurial side of things. You're out there doing this. You're talking to VCs, maybe angel investors. A lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs. They're running growing businesses. I don't know, Lee, that even you and I really would know how to go about. Like, if we decided we wanted to go after some money to expand the network, I don't know what to do next. Walk us through, give us some advice on that. What would you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, to tell you the truth, the easiest way is just to network and get yourself out there. And I've been talking to Jeremy about this, that Atlanta, the startup scene and the tech scene in Atlanta is growing. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
We're basically trying to catch up to the Silicon Valleys, the Silicon Alleys in New York and things like that. And just basically getting out there, networking yourself, joining, chambers, joining business groups, even online, LinkedIn.
Sounds like a lot of work, Will.
It honestly, to tell you the truth, it is. And Jeremy can vouch because LinkedIn has been a tremendous source of business contacts for myself. And
so how do you leverage it? Like, you have this idea and then you go, okay, you know, do you know how to make apps? Is that your thing? That's not your superpower, right?
You're not the technical guy, right?
So you have this great idea. So now how do you find the technical guy that buys into your idea?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, you know, and that's actually the same way that I found Jeremy. You know, basically I had a great looking picture online and he saw it.
Saw it took.
I saw it took. No, but quite frankly, basically just being able to explain what the business is all about. And, you know, once they can buy into it and they see that it makes sense and it's scalable, then you're able to attract not only people that are interested as far as customers, but also the technical guy as well.
And then, so next up for you, you're just going to keep growing until you find the money, right? You're not waiting for the money.
Well, he's got Jeremy's salary covered on his first million. But after that, you're going to want to grow the business, right?
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we're using our boots on the ground right now. And, you know, as soon as revenue comes in, we're going to use that to grow the business. If we don't get the investment as soon as we want it, you know, we'll just continue growing the business through the revenue.
Well, it seems like it's very promising, but challenging. You have these two customer bases. You got to get the end user, but then you got to get the provider, and that's a full-time job, Will.
It is a full-time job, and that's what makes it attractive to not only investors, but you know, people that you know, are in the lawn care industry. You know, we're killing two birds with one stone, so to speak. So we're also helping the homeowners, and we're helping the business partners as well.
So, well, I love it from my perspective. I'm going to download this.
As a homeowner.
Some of our listeners know I don't have a yard at the moment. My home, much of it burned down a few weeks ago. But when I get my yard back, I think I'm going to try this thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to... You have a website or
Absolutely.
A Facebook page?
Yeah, definitely. If you want to learn more, just go to www.lawntap.com. Visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/lawntap. Also our Twitter page at twitter.com/lawntap. And if you want to contact us, it's contact@lawntap.com.
What an exciting time for you. I feel so much younger when I talk to, of course, you know, they're all kids now to me, right? I'm like 50 something. And, but no, this is very invigorating, exciting. We're going to keep an eye on your progress, man.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, hang with us. We're going to visit with another set of guests.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio. You ready for the headliner, man?
I am.
Oh, and she's back, right?
That's always promising when I come back.
We have with us from Taste of Atlanta, the sky's the limit. We got Miss Sky Estroff. Hello.
Well, thank you for having me. I am back.
Well, Sky, first off, get in there with the microphone.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Great.
Why don't you share a little bit about Taste of Atlanta? What are you guys doing for folks?
All right. Well, if you haven't heard of Taste of Atlanta, we're Atlanta's largest food festival. We're bringing out about 50,000 people every October in Tech Square in Midtown to try Atlanta's best restaurants. We bring about 100 restaurants over to that area.
You should really expand to the Beltline.
There you go.
I know. I really like the Beltline. I'm there every weekend.
We've had some conversations with Taste of Atlanta that we need to reconnect.
Yes, we definitely do. So, food mecca of Atlanta in that little
That's right.
area.
So, how many restaurants participate usually?
Usually about 100 combined. Mm-hmm. So, you can get a taste of every part of Atlanta when you're at Taste of Atlanta.
And then it's a day thing, a weekend?
It's a weekend. It's a Friday night kickoff party. And that's a little bit more exclusive, highbrow. We've got some bands. We've got some fun things going on. And then on all day Saturday, all day Sunday, we're providing all the taste from our favorite restaurants in Atlanta.
I love it.
And what's your favorite part when you go?
My favorite part is obviously eating. I like to try a little bit of everything.
I thought it was the drinking.
Well, no, of course not. Never. I'm really too busy eating to take a drink of anything. And it doesn't count because it's sample size. So
That's
like
right.
you there can you just go. Eat as much as you want.
I had a flight of beer last night.
That's nothing.
And I'm going to go ahead and mention their name so we can send them an invoice, your pie. And of course, the pizza was delicious, but it was like $5 for a flight of beer. You get these little bitty beers. But like you say, when they're like the sample size, that doesn't count.
No,
right?
It doesn't. Those are baby size beers.
I know.
I didn't all these realize they have that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if you don't like one, you still got like four
beers. Other ones.
You have options. You have lots of options.
All right, who'd you bring with you today?
Today, I brought Jason Sheets, who is a prominent business owner and restaurateur in Atlanta. He owns Hammocks Trading Company and Under the Cork Tree Restaurant.
We've been there.
That's right. That's
Under
in
the
that
cork
product.
That's it.
With the dates and the, oh, yeah, and the olives. I remember.
I've been to Hammocks, too. That's kind of like you'd like Hammocks. It's like a beachy place.
Oh, beachy. Yeah.
Pulled right out of the Gulf. Yeah. Oysters and po' boys and gumbo and
right. He's
good
from
margaritas.
Pensacola. He
oh,
like,
baby.
What's that restaurant you always go to?
I'm spending Christmas on the Gulf Coast.
It's called some weird name.
What, the Floribama?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Who doesn't know that? Wow.
A little bit of inspiration from Floribama, I'll tell you that.
Right. Yeah. That's the way I've never been to that one, but that's how I pictured it when I went to your
We
place.
Are talking about bingo on Saturdays and Sundays, possibly.
I love All bingo. Right. It's my thing. I won bingo on Tybee Island a couple months ago. It was the highlight of my life. It's
Lots
amazing.
Of fun.
Yeah.
So now, as a restaurateur in this market, I guess there's good and bad. That there's is a independent restaurants can do extremely well in Atlanta, where I consider us a pretty good food city.
Absolutely.
So how did you go into this and kind of say, I'm going to make my mark and I'm going to find some business in the different markets you serve?
Well, my business partner, William Sigley, and I spent a lot of time working at growing up in the restaurant industry, him in Vegas and me here in Atlanta. And it was just a dream that we each had to have our own business and operate. So that's what worked out about 5 years ago. We decided to pull the trigger at Hammocks, and that's just been going real well since then.
But you had worked at other restaurants at large.
Yeah, lots of Bones here in,
right.
here in Atlanta.
Because Hammocks and Bones aren't
a little bit different.
Just a little bit. But you right. know, people still like to eat and like to drink. It's just what you want to do when you get dressed up and go out.
Right. But how do you, from a business side, go, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to have our own restaurant. And there's like infinite choices.
Well, like just the real estate alone, just that aspect of it would be so complex to me anyway.
I would say that the first thing that we did was to find the market that we wanted to be in. And then...
So you found the part of town.
Found the part of town, which is Sandy Springs.
Right.
For both of our spots. And...
So what'd you like about Sandy Springs?
That's where I grew up.
Okay, there you go.
Born and raised.
Got some roots.
So that's the
Got
strategy.
Got lots of friends, lots of family. Okay. And the market really wasn't... There wasn't a lot of options when we first opened Hammocks in Sandy Springs. There were a couple good restaurants that had been there. But we absolutely saw... the need for more and the need for seafood, just like Hammocks is.
Right. Now, and I live in Sandy Springs as well, but Sandy Springs, where you're at, is a little north on Roswell Road. And do you have to, like, what's the kind of the distance you look around the restaurant where you say, okay, this is where my customers are going to come from?
I'd say 3 miles is really what we were shooting for. But Hammocks was absolutely almost a proven bad location. There were a lot of restaurants right. that didn't do well there.
You broke the curse.
We broke the curse, but it was if you look at the demographics around that area, you look on Dalrymple and Riverside and Spalding the other way. And,
right. There should be a lot of good.
Yeah. Well, there's demographics of all sorts.
But how do you get the thing off the ground? Like, I can see if I wanted to open a window company, sending kids around with BB guns.
And to break windows, right.
You know, that's a strategy. But, you know, here it is. You have a restaurant, a new restaurant, and there's so many choices. And then how do you just get it going, get it off the ground?
Well, I think that we hit the market where there weren't a lot of choices.
Okay.
You got right in that specific area.
Right.
It doesn't have the saturation of markets that a market like Buckhead or Roswell had.
Okay.
So we felt like if we moved in with a good concept that had fresh food and great drinks, that would be our way to get things started. And then it just spread like a wildfire. People love the product. Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
and it's all word of mouth from there.
Now, how do you get that? So do you just to say, okay, we're starting on this date. How much beforehand do you start kind of getting the word out and letting people know this is coming so you get some momentum?
I would say a couple months, but you got to be real careful with the way the restaurants can open with getting permits and liquor licenses.
Because that's
you've
easy
probably
to do,
seen,
right?
That's a slam dunk.
It's really hard to do, you know?
You can't just walk in and say, I'm going to open this and here.
Not at all.
Just give you some.
And then there's so much anticipation from the neighborhood that they're going open, open, open.
Right.
And you go, we're not ready. And then they go open, open. And
so you got to manage their expectations on that end as well.
It's all about it.
And then how do you kind of engage the community on an ongoing basis?
We participate in a number of different levels within the community. I'm on the Chamber of Commerce, and we spend a lot of time with that. We get into all different charities and fundraisers, and whether it's donating services or gift certificates or products, I mean, we absolutely get in.
So that's an important component of your marketing.
Yes.
And then you decided after a few years, you're killing it at Hammocks. You go, okay, let's open up another restaurant. You didn't go, let's open another Hammocks. You said, let's do something completely different.
Totally different concept.
You're right. A junkie. You're like a change junkie.
It's a little bit addictive. Yeah. It's like stepping on your toe, you know?
But it's under the cork tree, right? Yeah. That's a totally different restaurant.
Yes.
That is like higher end.
Yeah, it's a beautiful dining room focused in on wine.
Right.
And things that go well with wine. Right. So there's cheeses and
it's kind of a Mediterranean.
So paellas, tapas, tagines, all sorts of neat. It's certainly unique for the area.
Right.
We were talking, we did a lot of research on the Beltline, eating and drinking on the Beltline.
Had to.
Good.
Such a hard task. Wow.
And found some good restaurants that did great down there and thought, you know, we need that in Sandy Springs.
So you were looking for a hole in the market.
Absolutely. That's what we do.
That's what you do.
That's what we do.
So that's where you're looking, kind of saying, what are the choices out here? And you said, okay, let's fill a gap here that because this is popular on the Beltline, it should work here. Or this is popular in a different city, maybe, yes, that should work here.
Not just one location makes it popular, but that concept has a good following and it should work, but it's totally different from Hammocks, and that's why we wanted to do that. We wanted to keep our businesses close together so that we could maintain control of them, and we are there. William and I are there every day, just making sure things are done right.
So how do you come up with the menu? Because it is so different. You're starting from scratch, or this is your superpower?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of research. It's a lot of research, a lot of making food, tasting food, seeing what other people are doing, what's popular, and then just making it our own.
But before you make $1, before $1 comes in from a customer, you have some pretty serious outlay when you open up a new restaurant. You're borrowing this money, you're getting investment capital. How does that piece work?
We do private investment and then SBA loan as well.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you've become good at that, or connected with someone who's really good at that. Cause, I mean, again, that's the kind of process that if we wanted to expand a network on other people's money, I mean, we have to get with someone that knows how to navigate, or at least to me, it seems like this big, hairy deal.
I mean, restaurants are a very risky business. And I'll tell you firsthand that, you know, when you open a brand new concept like a Hammocks, the banks run away from you. Uh-huh. Right. Once you have a track record of being successful, then, you know, then the doors start opening up a little bit more.
But,
you know, regardless of managing restaurants for other people for 15 years and William managing restaurants for 15 years, us coming together for our first venture was...
That was worth zero to the bank.
It didn't do anything for a bank.
Yeah.
You know, it was tough.
You had the track, I mean, you've worked in the industry for years, so that wasn't the case. It was just their fear of restaurants.
Yeah, and I'll firsthand tell you that running some great restaurants in Atlanta for a long time, flipping that switch from managing to owning, it's a totally different ballgame. And you could take the best manager that's out there, and it's a new process. It's a new chapter to learn how to own versus how to manage. So,
So what was the stress level for you?
I had a lot of hair back then.
for our listeners, our guest today is very clean up top. All right, so you have a book that you brought with you. Is that just reading while the other guys were talking?
No, or this is where Under the Cork Tree came from. It's a children's book called Ferdinand and the Bull.
I've heard of it. Yes.
And you know, when at the Prado, we're located, right on Roswell at the Prado. There's a lot of other restaurants there that specialize in beer. Okay. There's beer and hamburgers. There's beer and chicken wings and all sorts of other restaurants that are there. So we're looking at that spot again, knowing that it's far enough from hammocks to for us to keep a hold of, but it's got to be a totally different concept. And so we settled on wine, and then what goes with wine, Mediterranean, and we spent a good month in that brainstorming world of what's the name of this going to be. Ended up at going flipping through. Actually, William has a young daughter, and they were reading this book, Ferdinand the Bull, and in this book, Ferdinand spends his day under the cork tree, smelling flowers and appreciating life and doing everything like that. And so we then thought, well, that'd be kind of a cool name. But in our restaurant, he's drinking wine and enjoying food, not necessarily.
It's a little different. Yeah.
Enjoying the sweet life nonetheless.
Right. Now, when you're going and choosing a location, the Prado, like you said, there is a lot of restaurants there. There's at least a half a dozen, mm-hmm. and they're all pretty good, nice restaurants. Is that a good thing? So is that something you look for? Or is it better to be by yourself?
It could go either way. We wanted the ability for parking, which we've got a big old parking deck over there. We, again, felt that the concept would be different enough to attract a... It's not direct competition. I don't think people are coming to Cork Tree looking at, let's just go to the Prado and pick a spot. They're coming as a destination for us, and we just happen to be, you know, a lot different from everybody else.
Right.
Well, I mean, I can see Holly and I knowing that the beer place is there, you know, because maybe it's been there for years, going and either going ahead and eating that night at that place or changing our mind when we see your place.
That's
it. But doing one or the other. I can see Holly and I doing it.
Well, that's how we found it originally. I mean, we go to Genki, which is a sushi place right across the street from you in the same shopping center. And then we looked around and we saw your place. And then we're like, oh, next time we come here, well, let's go here because this looks really good.
Yeah, I think that is where we see a lot of benefit from being close to the restaurants. People on the comeback, they'll come in and get a to-go menu. They'll come in and pop their head in and look around. And every time they pop their head in, they go, ooh, this will be nice for something.
Right. And it is so different. Yeah. That's what's cool about that shopping center. It does have really disparate choices there.
Now, we know that Skye, as a professional obligation, drinks a lot of wine. Is that how
Sometimes. I don't know. Maybe a glass or two every few months.
It's a professional thing. We understand. Is that how you guys got connected? How did you guys get connected?
Well, we got connected originally when I was working at Atlanta Eats.
That's right.
And that's how I was introduced to hammocks in the first place. And I discovered that place and could not believe there was a place with a beachy vibe in Atlanta.
Right.
And actually good tasting seafood, because you get a lot of seafood in Atlanta that just doesn't taste fresh and has that fishy
like
smell.
Frozen-y.
My family won't eat seafood when
nauseous.
They come here. But maybe they will now.
Yeah.
But they should.
It's a lot different when it comes to hammocks. And then now that I started working for Taste of Atlanta, we kind of reconnected in this way. And we're super excited to promote hammocks and Under the Cork Tree because they're amazing restaurants.
Thank you.
So you guys are going to participate in this Taste of Atlanta in some way?
Oh, yeah.
Talk through that a little bit.
We actually participated in the first Food That Rocks.
Yes.
That was a new program or a new event that Taste of Atlanta did for Sandy Springs restaurants last May.
And we're doing it again this May. May 6th, we're about to release the ticket sales today for a holiday special. Really good deals coming out.
So. All right.
Food That Rocks.
Food That Rocks.
Food That Rocks.
And that's a Sandy Springs-centric kind of Taste of Atlanta.
We'll have about 25 Sandy Springs restaurants participating. And it's a smaller festival. We're not having 50,000 people come out on one night.
Was it at Hammond Park?
Yes, Hammond Park.
But you got 8 to 10 new takers all the time.
I know. I'm like very excited for the new crowd. Get the word out. Yes. So it's going to be great. And you had Under the Cork Tree there last year and Hammocks too?
Yes.
Okay. And you're going to have them both this year? Awesome.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. You get them roped in on the air.
You're committed now. We have you on.
I don't remember when I said that.
So last year you participated and it was really fun, right?
Yeah.
It was just like a neighborhood party.
Yeah, it was. I'd say we probably had about 1,000 people there at Hammond Park.
Mm-hmm.
Big stage, bunch of restaurants. I mean, it was a very nice event.
And Thank you.
Yes, it was great.
So now, how do you attack an event like that? Like, what's your strategy from a marketing standpoint to get the most bang for your buck?
Well, we we did the lamb ribs from under the cork tree. So you're letting the food kind of speak for itself.
Right. So you're saying, look, we're different. This is something you're not going to get everywhere.
And that's one of the things that made Food That Rocks unique is that we weren't right next to another restaurant doing the exact same dish, you know. And sometimes you go to these events.
Do you coordinate that,
and,
or is that? Yeah.
No, it was when you present your menu, when you fill out your application, they make sure that you're not going to be serving the same thing as someone else.
So that's good from a festival standpoint. That's an important. Yeah. That's a great service for you as the entrepreneur.
We can't have 25 restaurants serving lamb ribs.
Right.
We got to calm it down with the lamb.
Yeah, right.
So that's Jason has exclusivity in that.
Sounds great.
Oh, so you give them exclusivity for a dish?
Sorry, what?
Do you give them the restaurant exclusivity in the dish?
Kind of, yeah. Wow. I mean, every restaurant is so special and different, and we're trying not to recruit restaurants that are all the same background or theme. You weren't next to every Mediterranean restaurant and every seafood place in Atlanta or Sandy Springs. So we try to put a lot of variation in our restaurants.
He's
we take
fishing.
A lot of time.
They're not interested in your chili. Yeah. He's fishing.
We're interested in your chili.
I would agree.
I thought they would be.
I think we can make room for you there.
Now, how collaborative is the restaurateurs here in Sandy Springs?
I think we're very close. There's a restaurant organization.
A Sandy Springs one?
Yep. Sandy Springs Restaurant Association. It's part of the Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
We're 20 restaurants strong with a meeting once a month, and we get together. Mostly, it revolves around marketing.
Right. And what do you guys complain about? What frustrates you?
Traffic. Traffic's good and traffic's bad.
Well, there's so much building now. That must drive you crazy. But, you know,
in five years,
it'll be good, right? There's going to be thousands of other people living around here.
Yeah. No, we talk about that, and the city gets involved a lot with planning events. And Food That Rocks was an event that we reached out to Taste of Atlanta and said, you know, you guys do a great job with that. We'd like to have your help.
That's fantastic.
Planning this event, and they jumped on board, and so it's been a...
That's a win-win for everybody.
It works well.
So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you or check out their restaurants, can you share websites and stuff?
Yeah. Under the Cork Tree, the website is corktreerestaurant.com, and Hammocks Trading Company is hammockstradingcompany.com.
And then Hammocks is a little north on Roswell Road, north of Abernathy. Yep. And then under the Cork Tree is inside the Prado, which is just south of 285.
That's right.
On Roswell Road. And Sky, Taste of Atlanta?
Tasteofatlanta.com. And then follow us, Taste of Atlanta, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Snapchat. We got it all. Follow us everywhere.
And then this Sandy Springs event for May, you said?
It will be May 6th.
May 6th. And then tickets are now available, I guess.
They are now available. So look out. Once you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat, you will see all of our updates on everything. And you'll just click through and buy your tickets.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for putting this together.
Well, thanks for having us.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.